Welcome to Property Smart Advisors, the real estate and mortgage podcast. Whether you're a first-time buyer or just curious, all the tools you need to find, fund, and fortify your future. Because success isn't left to chance, it's built with precision. So turn up the volume and let's get started.
PropertySmart.ca.
Imagine an entire city essentially just stops buying houses.
Like just completely freezes up.
Yeah, exactly. Sales plummet by nearly 20%, right?
Yeah.
And inventory just stacks up to the ceiling.
With property sitting on the market for months.
Right. And by every law of supply and demand, the price tag should plummet. I mean, it has to, yet the average price goes up.
Which makes absolutely no sense on the surface.
No, it doesn't. Today is June 29th, 2026, and we are looking at a real estate market that seems to have completely broken the fundamental laws of economics.
It is it's a phenomenal paradox, really, when you have this massive glut of supply and just a sheer lack of buyers, the resulting price action we're seeing right now.
It shouldn't be mathematically possible.
Exactly. Not without some hidden variables completely skewing the board.
And uncovering those hidden variables is our mission today. Two incredibly revealing sources that, when combined, tell just a fascinating story.
They really do. It's a great pairing.
First, we have a micro case study, which is the May 2026 area statistics from the city of Edmonton. And second, we have the macro context.
Right. The 2026 Mortgage Professionals Canada or MPC report on affordability.
Yeah, that's the one. So by layering the raw local data over the national psychological and financial trends, we're going to unpack why prices remain so stubborn.
As well as the underlying stress on homeowners and, you know, the structural ways Canadians are adapting.
Okay, let's unpack this by starting right on the ground in Edmonton.
Well, the Edmonton data is the perfect starting point because it forces us to look past the headline numbers.
Because the headlines are wild.
Yeah, they are. But whenever you see an average price, you have to remember that averages can be heavily distorted by the performance of, like, a single highly valued asset class.
And the headline numbers out of Edmonton for May 2026 are definitely jarring. I mean, year over year, sales are down 19.6%.
Which is huge.
It's massive. That's only 1,652 total transactions across the entire city. Meanwhile, active inventory has risen 9.2% to over 5,100 listings.
So there's just a ton of supply sitting there.
Right. We are sitting at over 3 months of supply, which is a 35.8% jump. We have a massive bottleneck of homes, yet the total residential average price rose 6% to $455,208.
Yeah.
If I go to a clearance sale where nobody is buying and the racks are full, the prices are supposed to drop, why is real estate defying gravity?
Well, what's fascinating here is that the overall average price is effectively a lie.
A lie.
Or at least an optical illusion, right? When you disaggregate that Edmonton data and look at the distinct submarkets, you see that for the vast majority of property types, the laws of supply and demand are working exactly as intended.
So prices are actually falling. Like the average price for an apartment dropped 4% down to roughly $200,000.
Mm-hmm.
And semi-detached homes also dropped 4% to about $423,000. So the entry level and mid-tier properties are actually absorbing the impact of that excess inventory, right? They're shedding value.
Exactly. Which brings us to the anomaly, which is detached homes.
Mm-hmm.
This category saw a massive 23% jump in active inventory.
So there's no shortage of detached homes sitting available.
None at all. But instead of dropping, the price of a detached home actually rose by 5.7% to an average of $589,610.
Wow.
And because detached homes represent the most expensive segment of the market and a really significant volume of the transactions, their rising price tag mathematically drags the entire city's residential average up with it.
So it's basically masking the depreciation happening in apartments and semi-detached units?
Precisely. It's pulling the whole average up.
What? You know, it makes me think of a lifeboat scenario on a sinking ship. The water is flooding the lower decks, like the entry-level apartments and the semi-detached homes are sinking in value.
That's a great way to look at it.
So anyone with available capital is rushing to the top deck, which are the detached homes. They are crowding into that specific asset class and driving the premium up, even as the overall ship takes on water.
Yeah, they're seeking the safest, most desirable asset.
But holding on to that top deck asset, especially at a 5.7% premium, requires an immense amount of capital.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Edmonton data shows us the sticker price, but it doesn't show us the carrying cost.
No, it doesn't.
To understand the tension of actually paying for that premium, we have to pivot to the National MPC Affordability Report.
Right. And the national picture really reveals the mechanics of that tension. And to truly grasp it, we have to consider the structure of Canadian mortgages.
Because it's very different from other places.
Exactly. Unlike the United States, where buyers can, you know, lock in a fixed interest rate for 30 years, the Canadian system is predominantly built on five-year terms.
So every 5 years, the mortgage matures.
Yes. And the borrower must renew at whatever the prevailing market interest rate is at that exact moment.
Which creates this sort of cyclical cliff. And looking at the MPC data, a massive portion of the country is standing right on the edge of it.
A huge portion.
Like one third of all mortgage holders in Canada expect to renew their mortgage in the next 12 months. We are talking about millions of households, and of that group, 67% are actively anxious about renewing at a higher rate.
And that anxiety is highly quantified in this report.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at a fundamental lack of buffer in the system. Roughly half of all mortgage holders nationwide have little to no room to absorb payment hikes.
Half the country? That's terrifying.
Yeah. 6% are already struggling with their current payments, and another 44% explicitly state they would struggle if their monthly payments rose by anything less than 15%.
Wow. It's like driving down the highway with the gas light on, knowing there's a steep hill approaching.
That's exactly what it's like.
You're fine on the flat road. That's your current 5-year fixed rate. But the moment you hit that incline, which is the renewal, the engine is going to stall.
And a 15% payment increase isn't some abstract scenario, right? Depending on when a buyer originated their loan, a renewal in 2026 could easily represent a 20, 30, or even 40% jump in their monthly carrying cost.
Which is just devastating for a family budget.
Completely.
Hmm.
And that engine load analogy perfectly illustrates why the MPC report classifies this as a widespread borrower resilience issue.
It's a structural fragility.
Yes, it's no longer just a question of who has to sign renewal paperwork next month. It's the realization that half of the market lacks the financial elasticity to absorb the current cost of borrowing.
But just like the Edmonton housing market is fragmented by property type, this financial pressure isn't distributed evenly across the population, is it?
No, not at all.
Some demographics are carrying a much heavier load. So who exactly is driving the car with the empty gas tank?
Well, if we contrast a past 5-year first-time buyer with a newcomer to Canada, the disparity in resilience is just striking.
So comparing someone who bought their first home recently versus someone new to the country.
Right. The timeline of market entry is the critical variable here. A first-time buyer who purchased in the last 5 years, so roughly between 2021 and today, bought into a really high price environment.
Sure.
Consequently, 66% of them are anxious about renewal, and 53% would struggle before a 15% payment increase.
So they're definitely feeling it.
Yeah, they're slightly more stressed than the national average, which is entirely logical given their loan sizes.
But the data for newcomers to Canada outlines a much sharper challenge, doesn't it? They report carrying significantly larger mortgages overall.
Much larger, yes.
68% are anxious about their upcoming renewals. But the critical data point, I think, is their vulnerability. A staggering 67% of newcomers are already struggling, or would struggle, before a 15% payment increase.
Yeah, that number is really hard to look at.
That is a full two-thirds of that demographic operating with zero financial buffer.
The mechanism behind that vulnerability is really a lack of historical equity. I mean, a move-up buyer might be taking on a larger mortgage today, but they are rolling over hundreds of thousands of dollars in equity from a property they bought in, say, 2015.
Right, they have a cushion.
Exactly. Newcomers do not have that luxury. They are entering the market at peak pricing, at peak interest rates, entirely from scratch.
And the report mentions credit history too, right?
Yes. Furthermore, the report highlights that they face the added friction of a limited domestic credit history, which can force them away from prime lending rates at major banks and into alternative lending spaces that carry even higher interest rates.
We're looking at a situation where two-thirds of the newest members of our communities are on the absolute brink financially just by putting a roof over their heads.
It's incredibly stressful.
So how is the system not collapsing? Why aren't we seeing waves of forced sales? Why aren't those detached homes in Edmonton flooding the market at a massive discount?
Simply because Canadians are fundamentally changing how they live to survive the math.
What do you mean?
They are absorbing the cost by generating revenue from the asset itself. The MPC report reveals that 36% of Canadians now say they need to rent out a portion of their home just to afford ownership.
36%. That is over a third of the market structurally reliant on tenant income.
Yeah.
And the report notes that is a massive jump from 25% in 2021.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, we're witnessing a structural change in the definition of a single-family home.
It's not just a house anymore.
No, it is transitioning from a purely residential space into a hybrid income property out of absolute necessity. And when we apply that macro trend to the vulnerable demographics we just isolated, the reliance on rental income skyrockets.
Give me the numbers on that.
Well, among recent first-time buyers, 29% rely on tenant income. But for newcomers, that reliance sits at an astonishing 53%.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Connecting this national trend of the house hacker back to the localized Edmonton data completely recontextualizes our initial paradox.
It really does.
We were trying to understand why detached home prices were rising by nearly 6% while apartments were dropping and overall inventory was piling up. We assumed buyers were overpaying for single-family homes.
And they aren't looking at them as single-family homes.
No. They are pricing in the basement suite.
Exactly. The detached home is maintaining its premium because it is the only asset class with the physical footprint to accommodate an accessory dwelling unit.
You can't put a tenant in your one-bedroom condo.
Exactly. You cannot partition a one-bedroom apartment to generate secondary rental income, which perfectly explains why the apartment segment dropped 4% in value.
Wait, that makes so much sense.
But a detached home offers the square footage to build a basement apartment, a laneway suite, or to rent out multiple individual rooms. Buyers are willing to pay a 5.7% premium on a detached home because they are factoring in the rental yield required to offset those terrifying looming renewal rates.
It's a complete shift in asset valuation. The buyer is no longer just evaluating the school district and the countertop materials, you know. They are evaluating the capitalization rate of the lower level,
which is a huge mental shift for a typical family.
And the daily reality of that adaptation is immense. Taking on a tenant means sacrificing privacy, taking on the legal and financial risks of being a landlord, and likely spending tens of thousands of dollars to retrofit a basement to code. It is an incredible amount of friction to take on just to keep a roof over your head.
It requires an enormous amount of psychological endurance, which leads to the inevitable assumption that, given all of this, the high prices, the renewal anxiety, the lack of payment buffers, and strangers living in your basement, the general population must be abandoning the goal of home ownership entirely.
Naturally, people must be abandoning the dream, right?
You would think so.
And yet, the data insists otherwise. The MPC report tracked non-owners who state they never expect to own a home. In 2023, amidst rapid rate hikes, that pessimism peaked at 51%. Over half of non-owners had essentially tapped out.
Right. They just gave up.
But today, despite all the friction we've outlined, that number has actually dropped to just 32%.
The underlying belief in the asset class has proven incredibly resilient. Homeownership expectations are surprisingly improving.
Yeah. 66% of non-owners state that current economic conditions have simply delayed their plans, not destroyed them. 22% actively expect to purchase within the next 2 years.
Which is wild when you think about the affordability metrics right now.
And a massive 76% still agree that real estate is a solid long-term investment.
Perhaps the most telling psychological indicator in the entire report is that 74% of respondents classify mortgages as good debt.
Wait, really? 74%?
Yes. They are looking at the same terrifying cliff of renewals. They see the engine stalling for half the market, and they still view a mortgage as a preferred financial instrument.
That's fascinating.
They recognize it as a mechanism for forced savings and long-term stability, basically viewing the current pain as a temporary, albeit severe, cyclical phase.
So to understand that endurance, we have to look at the primary barriers keeping that remaining cohort out of the market. Because 36% of people are simply satisfied with their current living situation.
Right, they just don't want to buy.
But for those who want to buy and cannot, 23% say prices are too high, and 12% say they cannot save the required down payment.
But the most revealing data points are at the very bottom of that list of barriers.
What are they?
Only 2% cite interest rates as their primary barrier, and only 2% cite mortgage approval.
2%. That is a staggering revelation. It's not the carrying cost of the borrowing that is keeping them out. It's the sheer raw price of the entry ticket.
Exactly.
They aren't afraid of a 6% interest rate. They just cannot amass the initial cash required to get past the threshold.
It fundamentally changes the narrative around housing affordability.
Mm.
The prevailing assumption is that high interest rates are suppressing demand.
Because that's what we hear all the time.
Right. But the data suggests that buyers are entirely willing to absorb the high rates and even willing to become landlords to manage the monthly payments if they can just secure the initial capital to enter the market.
So what does this all mean? Bringing these disparate data sets together, it tells us that Canadians haven't lost faith in the asset class. They are simply waiting out the storm on the sidelines, amassing capital, or, if they're already in the market, they are actively altering their living situations to ensure they don't get forced out.
To synthesize the dynamics we've analyzed today, we have a micro-market in Edmonton where detached homes defy gravity, floating above the depreciation of apartments and semi-detached units.
Mm.
And that local phenomenon is being driven by a national macro landscape where buyers are highly leveraged, terrified of their upcoming 5-year renewals, and increasingly reliant on generating tenant income to survive the mathematics of their mortgages.
For you listening right now, whether you are a renter meticulously trying to save a down payment in a market that feels totally out of reach, or a homeowner scrutinizing your budget ahead of a looming mortgage renewal, these numbers confirm that you are absolutely not alone in feeling this pressure.
Not at all.
The friction you're experiencing is not individual failure. It is systemic, it is widespread, and it is the defining characteristic of the 2026 market.
And this raises an important question, one that leaves an unmentioned implication for us to mull over today.
What's that?
If nearly 40% of overall homeowners and over half of newcomer homeowners are fundamentally forced to become landlords just to afford their properties, are we transitioning from a nation of homeowners to a nation of micro landlords?
Oh, wow.
And if the primary residence is permanently evolving into a multi-unit income property, how will that fundamentally, permanently change the social fabric, the expectations of privacy, and the sheer density of our traditional residential neighborhoods?
From the traditional single-family home to a nation of micro-landlords. That fundamentally shifts how you look at the house next door, and it completely reframes the lifeboat analogy we started with.
The laws of supply and demand.
Exactly. The actual asset being bought and sold has simply changed its shape. It provided a crucial window into the deep human and structural adaptations happening beneath the headline statistics. That is it for this deep dive. Keep questioning the data, keep looking for the hidden variables, and we'll catch you next time.
PropertySmart.ca.